This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Terms and conditions apply.
What the Tech?
Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zan. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Thrott. How you doing, Paul?
I'm tired.
You're tired, huh? Back from CES. Your first time at CES in how many years? 7 years? 5 years?
I think it's been 6 years. Mm.
6 years. We're going to talk about CES. I have so many questions for you.
Yeah.
So many questions.
I have so many answers.
Oh, great. So how was the... we'll talk about what a disaster it was for you to get back. It was a very difficult trip for you as a whole, from what it seemed like. What day did you leave?
I left Wednesday night last week on a night flight. So like whatever day that is, I don't know. On the fourth.
And then you came back when? Friday?
Well, I was supposed to come back Friday night. I came back Monday, Sunday night, midnight, you know, whatever that is, Sunday, Monday.
Yeah, that's not fun. Not fun at all when you want to get home.
Yep. Yeah.
Guys, we have so much to talk about. I want to talk about CES, some of the things that I was impressed with at CES, some of the things that Paul was impressed with at CES, and the things that sucked, which was a lot. A lot of nonsense happens at these events.
It was a lot of suck.
A lot of suck. But before we do that, let's talk about our sponsor, and that's Casper. Casper is an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price because everybody deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off your mattress purchase when you visit casper.com/Andrew. That's casper.com/Andrew. And you enter the code Andrew at checkout. I've been sleeping on a Casper mattress for 2 years now. And let me tell you, this is a lifesaver. I have a terrible back. I have a hernia. I have a couple discs that are bad. I have 4 herniated discs in my back. I'm someone that probably requires surgery, and I'm refusing to, and I'm trying to treat it with just eating right and exercising and stretching and doing it that way. So when I first hurt my back, I was recommended to go and buy a very expensive mattress. I spent like $2,000-$3,000 on a stupid mattress. I hated it. It was a very uncomfortable sleep. I had it for a couple of years, and this is one of those experiences where you go into the store, and they make you sleep on this ridiculous thing, and they measure, you know, your leg is a 4, but your back is a 7, so you need this type of mattress. They have this whole crazy, insane process on picking the right mattress for you. Well, let me tell you something. It was terrible. I had a miserable time with it, and when Casper came on board, they offered to send me a mattress, and I took it, and since then, it's been every night has been a dream. Here's a great thing that Casper offers. Casper offers free delivery and painless returns with a 100-day period. You got 100 days to lay on this thing. So you don't have to go down to a showroom and just lay on it for 5 minutes and determine. You got 100 days. If you like it, you keep it. If you don't, you can return it with no pain. I absolutely love Casper. These guys are great. Been using it. Paul has a Casper mattress. I have a Casper mattress, and so should you. Go to casper.com/Andrew. Enter the promo code Andrew at checkout. Get $50 towards your mattress purchase. That's casper.com/Andrew. Terms and conditions apply. Paul. Where do we begin? So CES, you and Brad went. You were very busy. You did a podcast almost every single day from there for Therot.com for premium members. You saw a lot of things. And on Therot.com, you made my life so easy. And you made the Therot Best of CES 2017. And let me tell you, when you do these lists, it makes my life so much easier because I don't have to go from site to site and see, you know, what everybody else is recommending. Because I trust the Paul Therot way.
Oh, geez.
Of technology.
Well, I mean, to be clear, you know,
this is what you picked. This is what you saw.
Yeah, and we focused on the PC world pretty much.
Yeah. Listen,
that may change, you know, in the future, but.
Yeah, I saw some cool stuff that had nothing to do with the PC world. I saw some, you know, gadgets and devices that I thought, oh, well, that's interesting, but we're not going to talk about that. You know, let's stick with the PC world. Best of show. By the way, you guys can follow along if you're listening to this at home and live right now. You go to Therot.com.
Can't wait to find out what it is.
Yeah, I can't either. Therot.com Where's the link? Now I got to find this. Where is this post? I had it minutes ago. So at therot.com, you can go there and see. It's under the hardware section. You can see what they picked. Best of show, the Qualcomm Snapdragon 835. And we had spoken about this the week prior about how we're looking forward to this year.
Yeah, I mean, I did this sort of in the spirit of CES, which is that it's about forward-looking technology for the most part. I mean, some companies are announcing stuff that's shipping like next week or whatever, but most of this stuff is meant to be like this. You know, it's meant to be for forward-looking. And when I look at the PC industry in particular, I mean, the Snapdragon 835 will impact the mobile industry too, obviously. But looking at PCs, I mean, this is like this change agent, and I think it's an important milestone for the PC world. So it just seemed like the obvious choice.
But do you think this is going to be? So when this chip comes out, I don't know what the exact release date is, obviously in the PC world, but how do you think this is going to change the PC market, knowing that this chip essentially will run Windows?
Well, Intel is to hardware what Microsoft is to software, meaning that when there are no threats to that thing, they don't do their best work. And Intel has no serious threat right now in the PC market, and they're not doing their best work. In fact, you know, they have not resisted. They've just been unable to kind of embrace this mobile first, cloud first thing. Like, they've tried. You know, you remember last year they canceled that Atom processor that would have been aimed at tablets and phones. And so this is Qualcomm's introduction to this market is an important thing because of the impact it's going to have on Intel. They may literally just beat Intel. I mean, we'll see. There's no reason to call something like that this early, but they may not. But if they don't beat Intel, it will because Intel finally woke up and started making processors that are super efficient with regards to battery life and power management while still being powerful enough to run, you know, Windows desktop apps. So this is the push, I think, that Intel needs. And it's the thing that's going to, you know, provide that check, which you always need, on that monopoly that dominates any business. And so, you know, in the future, I think we're going to see more ARM chipsets. I mean, Terry Myerson said as much, I think, back in December, but it's smart of them to focus on the big one, on the one that is the most far ahead. And I think, you know, AMD obviously has played this role in the past. AMD was responsible for a number of things that have kind of driven the PC market at different times. The big one being the X64 stuff, right?
Yeah.
All the computers we run today are benefiting from the fact that that AMD said, we don't need to have a new architecture. We can do 64-bit with the x86 thing that we already have. And we're all running that system today. It was a big change. Did not come from Intel. So we'll see. You know, Qualcomm will either, like I said, they're either going to, well, there are three, I guess there are three alternatives. They'll either beat them entirely in the low end. Intel will wake up and beat back Qualcomm, which would be fine too. I don't really care. Or the third part, you know, is that we now have these two options that equally make as much sense as each other. So, you know, we'll see. But it's just from the perspective of potential future-leaning change and all that kind of stuff, I think Qualcomm Snapdragon 835 was kind of the obvious one.
So here's the interesting thing. It really comes down to how Qualcomm will handle hardware emulation. Right? That's really what it comes down to, is how good this chip actually is when it comes to performing as if it, you know, with Windows, you know, because essentially it's doing hardware emulation, and notoriously history shows that they're not always the most efficient ways to do things. But this may be good enough. You know, this is the first time that something like this is hitting the market. Yep. It probably is not going to be perfect, but on the low end, I'm curious, that's what matters here, the low end. So how much of a price difference will we see on the low end between what Intel's putting out and what AMD's putting out and what Qualcomm will put out?
I mean, I don't know.
You know, is it going to be, you know, $100 cheaper to use this chip for HP and put it into consumers, you know, put the money back into the consumer pocket? I don't know. I'm curious.
I don't think this is just about the low end, right? I think there is also a premium market that wants super thin, light, and awesome battery life. And I think that, you know, Qualcomm will address that as well. Microsoft says that the performance is incredible. So we can only take that at face value. Yet no one has actually tried to install an app on such a machine and actually run it and see how it works. I mean, we don't really know, but so we have to kind of qualify any excitement we have. But I have, you know, based on what they've said, and it wouldn't make sense for them to lie about it, right? Plus, I would also say, you know, remember when they did demo it, and I talked to them ahead of time. They were telling me that they wanted specifically to show Photoshop starting from a dead stop. That
oh, interesting.
It wouldn't be running when they got to the computer. They wanted to show that actually worked. That's a big, heavy application. It takes a few seconds to start. And so it did appear to run full speed.
So according to Qualcomm, they're saying that this upgrade over the previous generation chip, it's obviously smaller, and it's going to give you better battery performance, which is a major part, and it's going to be 25% faster graphics to support visual and augmented reality experience, 3D audio upgrade, security biometric integration. So, I mean, this is a great...
It's significant, yeah.
Yeah, this is a major, major increase. I'm curious how it actually executes. And how close are Microsoft and Intel working... Intel, Qualcomm, it should be Intel. How close are Qualcomm and Microsoft working on this?
Well, I mean, I'm not really sure how to answer that. I mean, are they working more closely than, you know, Intel and Microsoft work together? Probably not. Okay. I mean, Intel and Microsoft have a much longer term and symbiotic relationship. But, you know, Microsoft obviously works with all kinds of companies. This is a big one, though, because they're writing Windows specifically for this chipset. Microsoft has done the work to create that emulation layer that will allow x86 apps to run on top of the silicon. So, I would presume that they're working closely together. It's not like an isolated thing, but I'm not privy to the exact nature of that relationship.
I'm curious to see how well this works. Also on this list, you had an LG laptop, ultra portable laptop, the LG Gram, the 15-inch laptop. And why'd you pick this? I'm curious about this because LG out of all the companies.
I know. LG is not a big name in PCs here in the United States. And I guess unless you step out of the kitchen, they're kind of not a big name in the United States, but this is a line of computers that has grown. And so now they have 13, I think 14 and 15. Yeah, I think it's 13, 14, 15 inch versions. The 15 inch version, I really like bigger screens, but one of the issues when you get to bigger screens, of course, is, you know, size and weight. One of the nice trends in the PC industry over the past 2 to 3 years has been this notion of putting a bigger screen in a smaller form factor, and you get those edge-to-edge displays where you remove the bezel. And that's what each one of these things is. The 15-inch is particularly impressive to me because it's a 15-inch laptop that only weighs 2.4 pounds.
Oh, wow.
I mean, that's unheard of. In fact, I'm not going to get the number off the top of my head, but I believe that weighs more than a 13-inch ultralight HP
Envy
from last year.
Yeah.
And it's two screen sizes bigger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's truly impressive. And when you pick it up with one hand from the corner, which you can do because it weighs so little, it feels so light. It's as if there were no mechanicals in it. Like it's just the shell, like a prototype. It has that lighter than air kind of, like you almost jerk it up too fast because it weighs so little. It's really, really neat. And I kind of like the design of the 13 and 14 inch versions a little bit better. The 15 inch has like a numeric keypad built in, which I don't think was completely necessary, but it's just because of the size of the screen. I mean, it's really impressive.
Yeah, but it also has a tremendously large battery. It's a 60 watt battery, which is one of the highest capacities in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they've kept the weight down. I'm interested.
I know it's amazing. They did it. So yeah.
And we're not talking about, you know, some mobile chip on here. It's running an i7.
Right.
You know,
right.
So it's a full fledged ultrabook.
That's right.
Yeah, very interesting. I'm curious about this. Any news on when it's in the market, what the deal is?
I don't remember the timing on it. I'm sorry. I do have an article. Actually, I don't on this one. Do I? Actually, I never wrote up the Gram. So, normally, when I write up the CES stuff, I explain when it's going to come out. I don't remember on the LG game. Yeah. I'm sorry.
The best all-in-one, the Dell Precision 5720?
Yeah, which is identical to an XPS model as well. So they have like a consumer and a workstation version of the same device. 27-inch screen, 10 speakers, 6 in front, 4 in the back.
Yeah, so this thing is crazy.
It's nice.
Yeah, it turns into a canvas, right?
No, that's a different computer. That's a different thing.
That's a different thing.
Yeah, the canvas is a screen. This one comes in touch and non-touch versions.
Yes. Sorry.
The touch version, you know, kind of tilts down a little bit like Surface Studio, but The Canvas is another Dell thing. Those two things together were, actually they had some other devices too, but it's kind of interesting desktop PC thing. So the Canvas is a screen that sits in front of you. It's a little bit like a Syntec type thing, except it's actually a display. It's a second display. It works with touch. It works with a pen, which they have, and it works with these special little devices, which are like knobs kind of that you can put on them, and they're like smart knobs or whatever. And it's designed to do sort of what you would do with Surface Studio in that it's aimed at creatives, typically would be used with like a Photoshop type application and, in two-handed mode and all that kind of stuff. But the cool thing there is it's just a screen, so you can add it to any computer. So it's a lot less expensive than a Surface Studio.
So you also had the best display, Samsung UH750. Yeah, 750. It's a 31-inch display. Interesting pick. Why this one?
Yeah, the displays were semi-random in the sense that the Samsung displays were clearly the best, and we just had to pick one. You know, they had curved and non-curved, and so we kind of went with that. There was a really impressive 8K Dell display at the show, but that one is super expensive and is way further out, and I just didn't feel like it was the kind of mainstream thing that, you know, like, I guess we could, you know, you could invent this, like, fantasy category of, you know, best, like, super, super premium display. Like, but, okay, but for real life, you know, these things were just great displays. Samsung's always made great displays. I use a Samsung on my gaming, for my gaming stuff, and, you know, I'm in the market for 4K, UHD, HDR display, and the Samsung stuff was just, it's just beautiful.
Which I want to talk to you about the TVs after we get done with the list, because I'm really curious about some of the stuff. You also saw a curved widescreen monitor, 34-inch. Yeah. You had that as the best curved display. That was also by Samsung, which you're a fan of them. So this was interesting. I found this device very, most innovative PC, the HP Sprout Pro. Now, this is a very bizarre device. Yeah. I'm assuming this is more for classrooms and creators, I guess.
Creators, that's how I'd,
When I saw this, I go, oh, this is great for like a classroom.
Yeah, that's a good point. As you said that, that's a good point.
It combines 3D capturing of real life objects and a 3D printer. So it has a projector on top and a printer on the bottom. This is crazy.
Well, actually, I'm not sure if it has a printer built in, does it? Maybe it does.
I don't know.
Remember, but the cool thing, the thing that put this one over the top is the original version did 2D scanning, which you could do from the
projector. No, this just does scanning. Yes, it does scanning of the device. Yeah.
The innovation this time around, aside from all the basics, right, they've improved the specs, et cetera, is it does 3D scanning as well. And you can then take that 3D object that you've scanned into the computer and use it with this kind of new generation of 3D software, some of which is coming in Windows 10, some of which is third party. And you can also print it to a 3D printer if you have such a thing and all that. But you actually kind of hold the device under the – or hold the thing you're scanning or put it on the mat and then position it as prompted. And you basically just turn it around in space so that it can scan each side of it. And then you can manipulate it. You know, so if you need like a, you know, if you could design like a cover, for, like maybe you had a cover for your smartphone, you could scan that thing in and then make a new version of it or something like that. And then do a 3D print of it.
Very cool. Where did I see this before? I saw someone else do this.
You saw someone else do this?
Yeah. I might have seen something like this at CES last year, but it was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not too sure though. I don't know. Maybe I'm making it up. Best PC, gaming PC, the Omen X by HP.
Yeah, this one actually was first shipped late last year, but it's just so crazy awesome.
This one sits on the angle.
Yeah, it's a giant cube. It sits at the 45-degree angle. It's got four compartments, which, you know, for components of cooling. The thing I like about this is you can buy configurations. Like, you can just buy it. You can go up to the website and configure it exactly what you want. It does everything you would expect of a really high-end gaming rig. I mean, it's crazy looking. But if you're kind of the DIY type person, you can actually just buy the case.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, and you can just put your own stuff in it.
From HP?
They'll sell you the case.
How much is the case going for? This is pretty cool.
It's in the $500-$600 range.
Yeah, you know what? That's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's big. This thing is it's a really big case. In fact, you know the case you recommended to me that my son used.
Yeah, that we both. It's bigger than that.
It's bigger than that.
Oh my god.
Yep.
I'm thinking, can I put my case on an angle now? I want to put my case on an angle.
Yep.
I'm jealous. Let's see what else we had here. The best portable gaming PC, Acer Predator 21X.
That's insane. And I had seen the pictures of it ahead of time.
Oh, my God. I'm looking at this thing.
I didn't realize until I saw it in person like that this is a curved display. So it's a 21-inch curved display. And, I mean, the thing looks like a tank. It's gigantic. The exhaust ports in the back look like the back of a Star Destroyer from Star Wars or something. But I don't think this is a particularly, you know,
realistic
portable computer or whatever. Yeah,
it's also not cheap, right?
No, it's not cheap. But it's just so nuts, you know.
What's the price on this?
$9,000. Yep.
Why? Why?
I know. Why? I don't know. I think it supports. This one supports SLI, doesn't it? I think this is the one.
It could be. Yeah. I mean, they have different versions of obviously. Maybe, but maybe. Very interesting. Sorry. You know, I've always wondered why.
Oh, dual GPUs. That's what it is.
Why Sorry. These portable gaming ones never took off? I mean, I know Alienware did one, and Dell themselves did one, and now HP's making one.
Oh, everyone's doing these. Everybody's now. Everyone's red neon lights, and you know they're all kind of similar.
But it never became a thing, and I think it has to do with the battery usage.
Well, I mean, this is kind of a luggable market, right? Like the idea is like you want to carry it to a LAN party, and then when you're there, you just plug it in. Like I don't think anyone would ever actually game on this thing on battery power. The experience would probably be pretty terrible, and pretty temporary. Because I don't think the battery would last very long, but I could be wrong. I do something like this, right? Like I bring an Xbox up the street. We play with these guys, about once a month, but, you know, obviously it's not a portable machine, but I think it's the same thing. You come in, you set it up, you go and then you leave. And then I think it's just a little easier with the gaming laptop because you just open the screen and go, you don't have to plug everything in and get everything set up. You know, you don't want to carry around something that you built where things can come apart and it's potentially fragile. Like, it's better just to have the thing be together.
I really want to know how many they're going to sell.
It's not going to be many.
No. I'm curious about that. So something I was really interested in is Lenovo announced a bunch of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They announced a new ThinkOne X Carbon. They announced the Mix.
You completely botched that name.
Did I? What did I botch?
ThinkPad X1 Carbon.
What did I say?
I think you said ThinkOne X Carbon.
Jesus Christ.
I think that's what you said.
Yeah, I did. I probably did say the ThinkOne. You know what? I would love them to release the ThinkOne X Carbon. That would be the Chinese knockoff of Lenovo with the leftover parts in the factory. They just make the ThinkOne. what did you think of this?
Look, the new X1s are all beautiful machines. In fact, I'm probably going to buy a laptop sometime this year. And there's an HP that's one of my selections as well. Those are my two top choices. That HP Grim, by the way, is kind of an outlier. That's a possibility as well. I'm very interested to try it. But having seen what they've done in the past and looking at this device, it's just like the perfect rendition of a machine that's already nearly perfect.
What were the changes? Curious.
Well, this is the big change. Well, there are two big changes.
What a beautiful laptop. Nice looking laptop.
They've moved to USB-C for expansion, which is awesome, right? So common sense. This is great. USB Thunderbolt 3, I should say, from a proprietary thing, which was also already pretty great, you know, but okay, fine. But they've embraced this concept, which I talked about earlier, smaller form factor, bigger screen. So basically, these devices are 14-inch screens, but they're in a 13-inch body. And so they're super light, but the screen, you don't lose anything to the screen. The keyboard's completely full-sized. And so it's just a, you know, there's only so far you can go with it. Like, it's not like we're going to see a 12-inch laptop body with a 15-inch screen. I mean, at some point, you just, you know, the screen, you're bound by the dimensions of the screen. But Lenovo had not done that to these machines so far. And in doing so, they probably trimmed like 3/4 of a pound or half a pound off the weight of the device. It's brilliant. Wow. You know, so you get the perfect keyboard, perfect pointing, perfect expansion, perfect screen. It's just like, you know, the build quality is amazing. Thin, light, beautiful.
Really, really nice. They also had a couple other things, obviously, that was announced. They had X1 Yoga.
Yep. Transforming version of the X1.
You know what I really, really want? I don't, for me, and people, people think I'm crazy. I would like, I don't want touchscreen.
Yes,
I don't want touchscreen.
Right.
I don't want it to bend. I don't want it to sit on its side. I just want a standard laptop that's really thin and really good looking.
Yeah, that's the X1 Carbon.
That is the X1 Carbon.
You can get it without touch.
You could get it without touch. Okay, perfect.
Yep.
Perfect. I mean, does it really matter in the price or no? Probably not. Maybe $100.
No, it does actually.
It does.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. What is the Mix 720?
So the Mix 720 is the second generation version of Lenovo's take on the Surface Pro 4 now, right?
Okay.
So it's their Surface Pro device. So it has the watch band hinge stuff that we see on like the Yoga type devices. USB for expansion, they're moving to that kind of stuff. It's got the hardware Lenovo ThinkPad style keyboard, which is important. And, you know, I think when you know, we'll see what Microsoft comes up with this year, if they come up with a Pro 5, whatever. But I think when you look at this form factor, if you're a fan of it, I think it's safe to say for the time being that the Mix 720 is probably the, you know, the ultimate expression of that kind of thing, like the tablet that can turn into a laptop type deal.
So a couple other things, and this was the fascinating thing that this year that I saw at CES, and it's the fact that almost everybody, except Microsoft and Apple, I guess, is releasing these smart assistance boxes like the Echo and the Google Home, but all of them are running Amazon Alexa.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't really feel like there were a lot of those, although that's been kind of the story, right? You see that in the press all the time. There were a handful of companies that announced like Alexa.
I saw a bunch of no-name companies that I was shocked to see in their licensing Alexa.
Yeah, but I don't know that we can worry about too much about that stuff. Microsoft actually did make announcements at the show with regards to Cortana, right? They're working with car makers. They're working with device makers. And the thing that they told me was the big difference between them and, say, Google with Google Assistant or Amazon with the Alexa devices is that Microsoft's not making their own device. And that's one of the propositions they offer partners. We're not going to compete with you. And they actually did have a lot of partners who are building these devices. And so those things will happen over the course of the year. And, Amazon is a nice head start in the consumer market, but I don't think that's going to last. I mean, I'm confused by how well this has gone for them.
Yeah.
And I think that changes over time.
So I've had the Google Home since Christmas, and I've been, you know, I use it like I had people over, and I think it's fun for everybody to ask it some stupid question and it answers it. And it was fun to play Christmas music, you know, when I had people over during Christmas. But I feel like the Alexa is a smarter system because it learns and you could teach it things. You really cannot do that with Google. Google is kind of taking a step back. Right. Obviously, it came out a couple months after, almost a year after, right? When did it come out? Like 8 months ago? They started working on this. So Google's kind of behind in this, and I'm curious how Google's going to integrate eventually, and I'm sure they'll catch up. But that is the advantage that they have right now. And the fact that they're licensing this to Lenovo and whoever else,
right,
that might be, you know, that might be the answer for the smart assistance boxes. It's not necessarily Microsoft, like you said, that's going to sell it. It's going to be Microsoft's partners like HP and Dell and whoever else.
Yeah.
That's really where
we'll see. The problem is the end-to-end thing. And this is an area where it seems like Google could really do a good job, and it's curious that they haven't. But the problem is, you know, you're going to get it, you know, a lot of people are going to get in a car at some point and go to work. And if you want to do anything in the car that's related to what you're doing at home and on your phone, you're really limited, you know, to what's going to work, right? So Siri and Apple have a possibility there if they would make a little device for the house, but they haven't. And Google is the one that you could see in all three of those places, right? Like you would have it on your home, you would have it on your phone, you could have it in your home, like they sell the device, and they have Android Auto built into automobiles, so that's possible too. So we'll see, you know, we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Best 2-in-1, Dell XPS 13, 2-in-1.
Yeah, kind of the original edge-to-edge display, but it was always a laptop, and now they've done the version that transforms into a tablet. Finally, I'm not sure what took them so long, but it's a beautiful device.
I can't see it. Does it fold or does it come off?
No, it turns around 360 degrees. Yeah.
Okay. Best portable PC, HP Spectre 360 15-inch. Is this a new version?
Yeah, and this is one. So last fall, they came up with a new version of 13. The 15-inch version, which I loved before, was kind of a, it was a big device, though. This, is, again, is one of those things. It's a 15-inch screen but 13-inch body. It's got that, you know, they do two different color styles in the Spectres. There's the kind of classic silver, but there's also this kind of, I think it's like ash and copper. It's the dark color scheme one.
Yeah.
Gorgeous. So they do it. That's what they're doing on the 15, and it's just, it's so beautiful.
I saw somebody at the bar the other day with one of these, the 13-inch, not the 15, obviously. And I was playing around with it, and man, what a beautiful laptop. It's really, it's amazing how they've kind of stepped away. The PC industry has stepped away from these MacBook clones, and now they're doing something unique and really, really good looking.
Yeah.
Best mini PC. I was very interested in this, and it's the Intel Compute Card. So it's the size of a credit card, essentially.
Yeah, a little thicker, but yeah, but that's a little taller, but yeah, and basically.
It's
and
it's a computer.
Yeah, so it does, you know, Intel makes NUX, obviously, like the thing I use, which is like a mini board inside of a case. It also makes stick PCs. I think it's called Compute Stick. And now they have this Compute Card, and it's designed to do two different things. One is it's like a thin card. Like you said, it looks like a credit card. And so you can embed it in devices. It can be used as basically an IoT thing to smarten up a device. And so like someone who makes fridges or
TVs,
you know, toasters or whatever, and wants to make it into a smart device could just, you know, license this thing from Intel and put it right inside. But enthusiasts can also buy it and put it inside a case or not inside a case. It just comes in its own little sleeve or whatever. And they have a special adapter, which is USB-C / Thunderbolt based, right? So it's full speed. And then it connects to a bunch of peripherals, and you can use it just like a PC. And so I don't know. I don't think they've announced pricing, and I don't know what the pricing is. But when that thing comes out later this year, it becomes this really versatile little machine that can run anything from like an embedded processor all the way up to a Core i7.
Oh, wow.
And it can work. You know, it's a computer. So yeah. And, kind of innovative. Yeah,
they've announced also a couple partners for this, which is good. It's Dell, HP, Lenovo, Sharp, and a handful of regional suppliers.
Yeah, so some PC makers and some device makers. Yeah.
I'm hoping to get through this because I wanted to bring up. A lot of people were asking me about Kodi, and we had a small discussion about it. And I was hoping to bring that up today if we have enough time. Just a quick thing about it. We discussed, obviously, best tablet detachable Lenovo Mix. We spoke about that. Best tablet detachable for business, the X1 tablet by ThinkPad.
Yeah, so basically all three of the X1s were unbelievable. So the tablet, it's funny. I tested the first generation of this device about a year ago. It's kind of quirky. It's a it's a tablet that can transform into a laptop. But the big thing about this thing is it's modular. And so you can have a module. You kind of attach the keyboard to the module base and you have that, but you can also add a module just for like more battery. And so the thing can go from, I think, 8 hours up to 15 hours of battery life, if I'm not mistaken. This is a projector module. And it really, what it does is basically you can get the basic kind of tablet plus keyboard form factor, or you can kind of add on to it and as you need. So depending on what type of job you have or what your needs are. You can just keep, clipping stuff onto it to perform different functions. So it's like super versatile.
Yeah.
A little complex. I mean, there's some complexity to all the little parts, but this is kind of a neat, again, like you were saying, like it's not a copy of something else that's out there, which it alone makes it kind of interesting.
Very, very cool. So I now here are my questions for you for CES. Mm-hmm. Did you enjoy forget about the disaster of the trip, but did you enjoy the trip?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I hate crowds, so me and 136,000 of my closest friends descended on the convention center. I verified that nothing has changed, right? So
same thing, every year.
CES is just like it's always been. If anything, it's probably a little bigger, right? I mean, they've kind of expanded out to not just the Sands, but to a lot of the hotels in the area.
Yeah, like many little CESs, yeah.
Huge traffic jams, hard to get to it, hard to get away from it, that kind of thing. Brad and I walked over the entire South Central and North Hall. So we did that thing. And now
how many
that
miles?
I've done that, it wasn't that, it was, it wasn't as far as I thought it was going to be. I thought the farthest I've ever walked in one day, I don't know miles, sorry, but in steps is 28,000 steps in Washington, D.C. one day just walking around. I figured I would match that, but I only got about 12,000 steps that day. So I think it was about 10,000 in the convention center. So not as much as I thought, but a lot of that stuff is crap. And so what I've discovered is if I get roped into doing this again, and I probably will, unfortunately, I'm going to stay outside. I'm not going to go into the convention center anymore. I'm going to skip all that stuff because most of it's just crap. I might go in for a couple of the big things like Samsung, Intel, Qualcomm, stuff like that. But I'm not going to walk back into all the generic Korean, Chinese, you know, just baloney, whatever.
You did that this year?
Yeah, we walked through the whole
thing. And what did you see? Just a bunch of nonsense?
It's crap, a bunch of stupid stuff. Aromatherapy machines, drones, robots.
5,000 drones,
Stupid. But the stuff I cover, primarily PC, the PC market, Windows, et cetera, this stuff was all available outside of the convention center. So you go over to the Sands, which is attached to the Venetian, and it was all right there, right next to each other. Dell had a beautiful thing. Lenovo did. HP didn't. I got to talk to them about that. I'm going to see if maybe they could do that next year. And then Microsoft was there too. And so there are these kind of sub-parties they have, like Pepcom and Showstoppers that are kind of attached to the show. Yeah. They're at different hotels around the area. What I would do next year, if I was going to do this again, if I was going to do this over, I'd come a day early because I did miss one of those shows. I'd go to those sub-shows because all the guys are there that I need to talk to. And I'd go to the Venetian Sands stuff, and that would be it.
And that would be done, rather than doing the whole crazy thing.
A lot less hassle. Because if you think about it, you know, from any hotel on the Strip, instead of going toward the convention center where the whole planet is going, right, you could just go up a road away from the – I guess it's actually the highway is away from the convention center. But they have these back roads behind the hotels. And just go down to the next hotel and just skip the whole thing, you know. I'll do that next.
Was there – what was the big trend this year? Amongst everybody. I mean, there has obviously drones thinner TVs, smarter TVs. I saw some of the TVs, and they're like super, super, super thin now.
There was a TV, Andrew. This is hard to contemplate. I'm not going to get the size right, but let's say it was 60, 65 inches somewhere. That was a big, you know, big TV. It was a quarter of an inch thick.
Wow.
Right? And it wasn't the type of thing where it kind of bowls out. It was like just straight up and down thick. So it's sitting there on a display that you can walk all the way around, and if you regard it from the front and you walk up and you see the thinness, and again it was like a quarter of an inch, it's super impressive. But when you walk around the back, there's another thing displaying on the back. It's not a mirror image, it's two displays. And I don't know how far this thing is away. I don't actually even know what the use case is. You know, most people at home would hang their TV on a wall or something. Yeah. But it was really impressive. Like, and so there was stuff like that. Samsung and other companies had, you know, TVs of various sizes that were super impressive. But, you know, TVs have been a thing at CES for many, many years, right? I mean, last time I was, I'm sure it was HD back then, but, you know, these big TVs, 80-inch TVs, you know, crazy, 90-something inches, whatever, it has always been a big thing. You know, people have said, I've seen what people have written about CES, you know, it was all about robots, it was all about you know, voice technology and digital assistants. And I don't actually think there was any one thing that was CES. I mean, you have to make a little list of maybe five things, but, you know, TVs are always on there. Those things are in the mix. Yeah, there was car technology, I think, was a big, big deal. You could make the argument that car technology is always a big, big deal, and
every
it
year,
is.
Yeah,
it is. But we saw car makers integrating technology into the dashboard in ways that actually I think are new and fairly unique this year. And I think that stuff is important. And I don't actually think, you know, a lot of people are like, wow, they released a lot of new computers, you know. Yeah, they did that last year too, actually. And they did that the year before. I mean, you can go back and look at my CES coverage every year. And what you'll see is this happens every year. But I feel like the quality of the PCs was particularly high this year.
Compared to previous years, generally, a lot of the PCs, like stuff like this, is left for their own announcements. But it seems like they came back this year.
Okay,
right? Am I right?
They every year at CES they have announcements. I don't actually believe there were more. I don't even know. It just seemed like it was higher quality.
That's what I mean. The quality of the announcements were a little bit better. You know, something that I noticed, and I wanted to get your take on this, because you mentioned a little bit about the TV, but what do you think of the concept of removing the insides of the TV and putting it into its own little box? Because I saw that that was a major trend where now what they've done is they've made these TVs thinner, and they're saying it's thin as a picture frame. You've hanged this up flush against the wall rather than having, you know, that gap. And it's a very thin, most of them are using proprietary cables. It's a very thin cable, and it connects to like its own box. It reminds me of the early plasmas. When I had, when I bought my first plasma, it was like that, where it had a box to control the TV.
The Samsung TV that I have now basically does that, except it's not all the guts. It's the TV itself is, it's not like the TV is a quarter of an inch thick. The TV is probably, you know, 4 inches thick at its thickest or whatever. And I'm sure it varies as you go up, but there is a breakout box. Like you said, there's a proprietary cable. It comes away from the TV, and then there's a little box, and the box has, I think, just four HDMI inputs basically on it, and maybe USB and something else.
Yeah.
And I actually like that system because it allows you to put, like, your TV is as flat as it can be. It's going to be up on the wall.
Yeah.
You have one thing coming away from it. And then you can put that stuff in the stereo cabinet or whatever, or underneath, however you do it. Yeah, that's a good way to do it.
Yeah, so this is my thing here. It seems like that makes way more sense. And I'll tell you why.
Yeah,
and I'm sure someone's going to tell me, well, no, it doesn't, Andrew. It's another set-top box. But here's the problem with this. Like, if the TV in my living room. Mm-hmm. And actually, here it is. The TV in my bedroom. TV in my bedroom, I've run the cables through the wall.
Right.
So whenever I need to run cables, I essentially have to move the hole, because when I move the TV to access the hole behind it, you know, because I have a cover, I have to take that cover off, drop the cable, fish it out from the bottom, and then run it back. That's a little convoluted when you could just have one cable connecting it.
Sure.
You already have a box somewhere. Everybody has cable, or everybody has some sort of Apple TV or Roku, whatever. Isn't it better to just run a cable this long rather than running, you know, 15 feet, whatever you have to run to get it to the TV?
Yeah, I mean, well, you've seen the setup I have down in the cellar where they plug the TV in behind the wall.
Yeah.
And then there's the cable comes down, and there's a hole in the wall. You know, that's nice. It's not, you know, it's got like brush.
Yeah, they did it the right way.
Yeah, and the little, you know, just the cable comes out of it, and it has that box on the end of it, and then you can, you know, attach stuff to it.
Yeah.
I don't think of it as a set-top box. It's just a breakup box for the connectors.
Yeah.
You know? So it's not an addition. I mean, it's just a good design. That's all. It's smart.
It's interesting. I think that may be the way to do this, rather than putting, you know, 15 HDMIs on a TV. You just put one, you know, the one that you need, and then you have it on a breakout box.
Yeah, and it's not just – it's hard to get up behind – you know, you tilt the thing back, and you're trying to plug in cables, or you have stuff clinging off the side or whatever. Just have one cable, and you have the box that has all the connections on. It's perfect.
Yeah, so I had a – when I saw that they went back to this in a weird way, I was very pleased because I had to – hook up my Wii U because I had people coming over, and I hadn't hooked it up, and I ran some extra HDMIs previously, but one of them went bad. So
break
I had
out your Wii U drinking games.
Yeah. I don't know why. I'm still stuck on this Nintendo thing. I had to literally take the, you know, and then I have a cover with the paint, and I had to move everything. It was crazy. So when I saw that they were doing this, I was very pleased that this may be the trend now with television. Was there, like, I saw some cool stuff. There was some accessibility stuff that I saw. I saw, you know, some cool drone stuff. But really beyond that, like, nothing much with cameras. Nothing really that stood out.
Yep.
You know, like, even like, the augmented reality and the virtual reality stuff. Like, nothing really that stood out. A lot of crap. Everybody's doing one. But nothing really big. Was there anything on the PC side that and not the TV, obviously, that you saw and you're like, oh, that's, you know what, that's really awesome?
No, not really. I mean, you know, obviously the TV stuff is always incredible. I mean, it's whatever, but you know, you said not that. So no, I mean, we walked around this whole thing, and it's. You know, look, there's all kinds of connected speaker stuff. There's, you know, all the car stuff. You know, there's the open hatchbacks with the stereo the size of a Volkswagen poking out the back. That stuff was all there. But you get numb to it after a while. I mean, you kind of walk around and it's just like this explosion of sights and sounds. And most of it's just like, whatever.
So did you get a chance to see that Razer laptop with the three displays, the three monitors?
No, I didn't.
So Razer put out a...
Yeah, I mean, I've saw that.
Yeah. You know, it got stolen.
Oh, is that what got stolen?
Yeah.
So it's funny. I was wondering both at the convention center when I was walking around with all the stuff, and then later I mentioned how Lenovo and Dell, at least, and Microsoft were up in the Venetian / Sands. Lenovo had... the outside of their area was just in a common area of the hotel, so anyone could walk by, and anyone was walking by. It was always very crowded. You couldn't get in unless you were pressed, but you could walk by it. And on the outside, they had a lot of their new computers just sitting up on these kind of poles or whatever. And the first day I was there, I was like, man, someone's going to steal these things. Like, these are $2,000 to $3,000 laptops in some cases. They're beautiful machines. They're just out there in the open. I'm like, someone's going to steal them. And I don't know if anything did happen, but the last time I went back on Friday, there was, in fact, a very prominent security guard with the yellow top standing right next to them. And I thought someone either stole one or tried to, and they finally got smart to that, which is a long way of saying I'm surprised this kind of thing doesn't happen more often. I bet it happens all the time, to be honest, but we just don't hear about it. If I understood the story about the Razer stuff, they actually believe it might have been industrial espionage, that like a competitor
took it. Wow.
Stole it so they could make a cheap Chinese knockoff of it.
Wow.
So, yeah, I mean, we'll see if a three-screen, you know, Huawei gaming PC comes out. or whatever, you know.
The other thing that I was really interested in that was announced during CES, I don't know if it was necessarily like the highlight, but was Hulu's new live TV service.
Yeah,
to be honest, Paul, this may be the one.
Jeez.
This may be the one. They may be the ones that really $40 a month for the TV service. I'm sure they're going to bundle it with the other, you know, service that they have. That's $12 a month.
Sure.
This is pretty interesting. And the fact that they beat Netflix to this is fascinating. I mean, obviously, they have some of the networks that are dealing with them. They're really happy. But I'm shocked that Netflix has stepped back in this live game.
I think that Netflix has seen a future that makes sense for them, and it's basically a modern version of HBO, you know, where you have this library of content that was made by other people that you let people watch, like HBO shows, movies, but you also create your own content, and that there's a great value to that. You know, the number of Netflix original shows, some of which aren't actually Netflix originals, right? They're licensing stuff from the BBC maybe, or whatever it is, has exploded over the past year.
Yeah.
And I bet the reason we don't see a lot, you know, with the live stuff there is because I think they've looked at this and said, this is a perfectly viable business for us. You know, this is a good place to be. And those shows are, you know, it's not like they're all great, but when you compare them to the originals you see on Amazon or Hulu or whatever, or even some of the pay channels like Epix, you know, whatever those channels are, like Cinemax and so forth.
Yeah.
I mean, Netflix stuff is right up there with HBO, right?
I agree with you. Yeah, with the stuff like that. I have to tell you, though, regularly, mm-hmm. I watch Hulu way more than I watch Netflix.
That's amazing.
Like, way more. Like, not even...
How? Like, what are you watching on Hulu?
I'm embarrassed to tell you. it just the shows that are happening live. I mean, like Family, for example, like I'll watch Family Guy, or I'll watch like a new episode mm-hmm. of The Meg.
Are you watching TV?
I'm watching TV. I'm watching TV. I've never even attempted to watch a movie on there. But I'm not really a movie guy. Like, I don't watch too many movies, right? Like, that's not what I really do. But I do want to watch some live content. I almost canceled cable. I have yet to cancel cable. I almost did. I called the cable company and I lowered my bill. My cable, my internet, and my phone plan. I finally got the final number. It's $300 a month. I brought it down to $145.
Yeah.
And that is the best that I could do. The realistic best that I could do is $145 to keep. That's with keeping my internet. Yeah. If I were to cancel TV all on its own, I would be paying $120 a month.
Yeah.
So for $145, that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. Yeah, exactly.
At the end of the day, exactly. That's how they get you. So what I've done,
to get to that point, you have to fight, and you just save yourself $20 a month.
At the end.
It's like, who cares? You know?
Listen, for some people, that $20 goes a long way. You know what? For me, I'm sure it'll go a long way, too. I got a kid. But it's the convenience of not
right.
of it being
right.
there for me.
Yeah, this is the thing. You know, it reminds me of people who are still kind of cling on to Windows Phone. And they're like, how can you use Android? It sucks. Or how can you use iOS? It sucks. You know what? Yeah, the interface sucks. But it just works. And so you just go and just using the thing that comes with your cable. It's like, yeah, it's not as sophisticated as, you know, maybe TiVo is, or as some of these services UIs are really nice and everything. But you know what? You turn on the TV and it's there.
Yeah.
And I just want to watch TV. I'm not super concerned. I mean, yes, it can be infuriating to someone like me when you click a button on the remote and nothing happens. And you're like, seriously, go, you know, so you get that kind of stuff on any set top box, but it just works.
It just works.
And
that's what people
and literally
want.
That's all they have to do.
And
right. Why would you try any harder?
Yeah.
You just, you know, you're just trying to retain them. So it's easy.
So I have a question. Number one, what's your heart out today? As I say in the business.
Well, I have a meeting at 3:00.
Three on the dot. Okay. So next week, I want to continue mm-hmm. this discussion because you have a meeting at 3:00. So we're not going to do a post show. We're going to continue this discussion because I'm a little, not alarmed, but I'm shocked to see the level of average people, right? Mm-hmm. Not techies, not our viewers, not people that are really into video, regular everyday people.
Yep.
Pirating live TV and pay-per-views and on, forget about watching it on the computer, doing it on their set-top, but their, you know, Rokus and Fire TVs and whatever device they use. I am shocked at it. And this my I guess looking into this came from, I was sitting at a bar, and not even press, not even like the bar I go to, like a random bar, and somebody was talking about Cody. And I look, I'm like, and I thought they were talking about like a guy named Cody.
You thought it was the Cody of Zach and Cody,
yes.
The two kids,
yes,
on the
two kids.
Cruise ship.
Yeah, yeah, yep. The Disney show. No, they're talking about Cody, the application. And I asked them, I go, I got a question, like, who did it? What are you doing? He goes, oh, it's so easy. I bought a Fire TV, and this guy does it. Like, everybody's like, oh, I ordered it with it, or I bought it here, or I bought it on eBay for like $60, $70. You buy this thing, and it's already set up. And it's like every freaking movie that's coming out, every pay-per-view, every live channel. And they're like, yeah, I don't pay for anything. And I told
them. But you understand that you're
no,
cable
but that's,
provider.
They don't know this. They don't even.
What do you mean they don't know this?
Paul, unless they are all lying criminals.
Yeah.
I'm going to tell you. Unless they're like, they're like, I'm screwing the cable company. I'm pirating this, but I'm going to lie and I'm going to tell these people I'm not. None of them knew this is illegal. They were talking about
No, no. I'm talking about it. But their cable companies can see what they're doing. I mean, this is the type of thing where you get one threatening letter and then they just shut you off.
Sure, I guess so. But when I did my research, a lot of this stuff comes with a IP, like, masker. So it's always running on the application. That IP thing is running on within, like, they created, like, this automated thing where you start this thing, it's always running, it's hiding your IP, and you're running these things. I was shocked at how many of them do not even fathom the idea that this is illegal. They go, yeah, but I paid like $80 for it. It's not like I'm taking it. I go, you paid for a Fire TV that is running software. Listen, I don't judge. I don't care. Like, I'm not one of these like, you're a thief. I'm not judging these people. I'm just saying they had no idea. They just thought there's this amazing thing called Cody, and Cody runs this thing called Exodus. And
why didn't anyone think of this thing where I get everything I have to pay for free?
This girl, I never forget, this poor girl goes to me and she goes, and by the way, it wasn't the girls at Rattle and Hump. This is a totally random bar. And it goes, she's like, it's great. I watched UFC 207 on this thing. I didn't even have to pay $100. I just paid this guy the $80 and I bought this thing. It has everything. I go, but you know that you're pirating. He goes, no, but I paid $80 for it. None of these, it was like six people talking about this. None of them got
it. You pay once. Okay, jeez, wow.
So
amazing.
It was a very interesting discussion. So I want to dive more into this and talk about this next week. And I have, you know, my theory is if you make it easy for people, if you make, let's see, live content easy, if you make, you know, everything is in one application rather than signing up for three or four, you're going to have a way easier. What, you know, I guess as a user, It's going to be way easier for you to use, and as a provider, it's going to be less likely for them to pirate. You know, that's my theory. I think less people pirate music because now it's so accessible and so easy to purchase music or to listen to music.
This is the Steve Jobs argument.
That yes, kind of, yeah. Yeah. So I want to dive into that maybe next week because I thought it was very interesting. I thought it was
super confused that people would be pirating stuff.
But pirating, not knowing they're pirating, was the thing that shocked me.
Yep. Okay.
It just
sounds incredibly stupid to me, but okay.
Literally, the one of the girls there goes, and I genuinely believe it. She goes, "There's a Chinese guy up the block. You just bring it to them, and he does it for you."
No, that's exactly how all legitimate business is done. The Chinese guy up the street. No, I'm sorry, I questioned it.
Yeah, but it's Amazon, Paul. It's Amazon.
That's crazy.
I bought this Amazon thing, and now I have everything. I could watch Ronda Rousey. Why would I pay $200 to watch it on cable? Geez.
I don't know, because what you're doing is illegal. It just, I don't know.
Listen, I thought I didn't say anything.
I could
just
buy the Sir equipment out of the back of a truck. It's right up the street. It must be legit. It says
Listen,
Amazon
the Rolex I bought was $45, and it's legit. It came with it came with papers.
Yeah. Oh, that's too bad.
It was interesting. So, guys, I want, again, I'm not judging. Do whatever you want. Hire whatever. I don't care. Not my business. I thought it would be a fun discussion to have next week, maybe. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Paul needs to get out of here. He has a meeting. Patreon.com/whatthetech. Go there. Sign up for the bonus show. Next week, we'll have something. We'll show you how to run Kodi on your Fire TV. Well,
yeah, today's tip will be how to pirate everything. Yeah.
Paul, it's so easy to do now. It's not even – it's like 3 minutes. It's crazy. Yeah, but, crazy.
It's, but – yeah, but – yeah, it's still illegal.
You know what? Why would you know what? Why would anybody pay for anything at this point? Why would anybody pay?
Yeah, okay.
You know, other than the whole I'm stealing content. It's interesting. Right. Kodi itself is not illegal. To be fair, yes, Kodi itself is not illegal. It's not illegal. Kodi's a very good piece of software. All right, Paul needs to go. See you all later. Take care.